This is Lorna Canaz on April 10th, 1975, interviewing David Berman, full professor in veterinary sciences, University of Wisconsin in Madison.
And I was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1920, and I was the fourth son of immigrant parents from Bologna, Bavaria. My father emigrated to so as not to be drafted into the Tsar's army in 1904 at the age of 14, where he had enough money to get as far as the East End of London and spent 2 years learning his trade and earning enough money to then join Montslight on the east side, where he met my mother, of course, through the circle of the Bologna de Bernia people. And in due course, the streets were, of course, paved with gold in 1907, by this time. And my father became a small manufacturer. He prospered. He lost his business after the First World War and persisted. And the clear recollection of the four of us was that we were stimulated to achieve, and B, of course, the attitude was that you achieve in this society, but retaining your Jewish identity. And so, even though we were children then of the Depression, the four of us graduated from the city colleges, and this, I think, is an important point in the present context, where we're talking about the primary beneficiaries of higher education being the student. And the requirement for user fees or high tuition and so forth and so on. The four of us during the Depression, during the depths of the Depression, were able to achieve college educations only because the city colleges of New York had and still have a tuition-free system. They were highly selective in their admissions policies, but once in, and in the competitive era, it was possible to become educated.
But what language did you speak to your parents?
Our family language was English. My mother's mother died the year I was born. My older brothers communicated with her in Yiddish, the language of the language of my parents to older relatives, second, fourth cousins, and so forth and so on, would be Yiddish. The emphasis in our house was learning in the contemporary society. We received, we all went to Hebrew school, and the four of us were bar mitzvah and so forth and so on. But it was not a Yiddish speaking family. We did, not myself, but my older brothers more, were taken to the Yiddish theater. And, over and so forth. But we were a family which in which the direction was not assimilation, but drive towards achievement and education and contemporary culture, the culture of our society.
Were there some things that either your parents explicitly expressed or you felt that you could not do?
Oh, no. I mean, this was not a prohibition in any sense. It was simply that we moved in that society. I mean, and the drive, I think, all the sort of thing that my father would say, for example, was that to get ahead in this society, you must learn. This is apart from what we feel and still feel is the traditional emphasis on learning for learning, but also learning for success in this society. And secondly, what he said to all of us was, you've got to be at least twice as good as anybody else. And this is, of course, I'm sure something you've heard from lots of other people of my age.
Now, what did your parents say about people who, for example, went into the rabbinate or who spent their lives in a completely Jewish atmosphere?
They were respected. There was not any feeling that this was something that we should shun or anything of the sort. We were told we expect you to achieve. We were told both explicitly and implicitly we expect you to achieve. And we were, but the way in which we were to achieve was of our own selection. And I'm the only scientist in my family, for example. And there was never any question. As a matter of fact, that any of my three brothers had any interest in science at all.
What would your parents have said about someone who was very learned but made very little money?
The making of money was not the particular. Achievement was measured not necessarily as financial achievement.
Was that unusual?
Do I think that was unusual? Yeah, I think it was unusual. I had remarkable parents. It was unusual within the larger family. Most of my father had no relatives in this country. He came from a large family, but he was the only one who immigrated to this country. Others emigrated to South America, and others, I guess, maybe there are some survivors, but I doubt it. We lost any contact with any of them during the Second World War. But my mother's side, all of her brothers and sisters came over, so there was an extended family. Mm-hmm. And they were all in business. They came over also as desperately poor people and had been left with their mother. Their father died. Their father was a scholar who died after siring seven surviving children and leaving a young girl. Seven very young children. They were destitute when they came over, and
this didn't affect
they
your,
moved your business.
No,
your
no.
Family
within our family, there certainly was no onus against learning for learning's sake. Okay?
Even if it didn't make any money.
Including the fact that during the Depression, we had, as a family, tough times.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things did you have to give up? And stuff? What things?
What kinds of things did we have to give up? Well, we lost the home in which I was born, but we did not give up our education. We lost travel. The four of us shared clothing and so forth and so on. I can remember cold nights when we did not have coal for the furnace and so forth and so on until Pop was able to swing a deal and buy another ton. This kind of thing during the early 30s. So that, but during all that time, there was never any question that the four of us were not going to go through school and they're not going to go to college, and if we wanted to go beyond bachelor's degrees, that we were to go beyond bachelor's degrees. There was just never any question about it. We all worked.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was going
to ask. Oh, of course. Yeah, sure. We all had jobs. But why?
What kind of jobs?
All sorts of jobs.
Well, when did you start working?
When did I start working? I did factory work when I was 14 years old.
You have to lie to get in?
Yeah, of course. And when I was in high school, I was very lucky. I got a job working for the New York Times as I covered high school sports events at my own high school. I got paid for that. And then when I went to Brooklyn College, I had the same job. Summers, I waited on tables in the mountains. And so forth. I've done construction work, I've done farm work.
When did you do farm work?
Well, that gets us to the question of what am I doing as a veterinarian, I guess. I knew, I would guess, when I was in the seventh or eighth grade that I wanted to be a scientist. In those days, I thought I wanted to be a naturalist. I was very fortunate in the junior high school that I went to and that I had excellent science teachers. We had a program which took us to the American Museum of Natural History once a month. And I used to go on weekends myself. And at that time, I was convinced that I was going to be a naturalist. Excellent high school.
What did that translate into as far as what you saw as being, you mean, in the natural sciences?
No, as a naturalist, I mean,
physical sciences.
In the biological sciences, quite clearly, from the earliest stages. By naturalist, in those days, I was much taken with the explorations of both paleontologists who brought back those marvelous fossils which are at the American Museum of Natural History, and I was also much taken with both films and lecture material that I had seen at the museum, and then books that I read about wildlife observations, the earliest of the ethologists. They impressed me a great deal, and I thought that might be a direction in which I would somehow, not clearly defined, want to go. By the time I went to high school, I had become again with the stimulation of superb teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any ones in particular?
I had a high school biology teacher by the name of Greenberg, who, again, you see this is during the Depression, and this was a young man who was teaching high school biology and working in graduate work at Columbia at night. And he had the capacity to stimulate people to the excitement of experimental science as compared to observational science. And so I was stimulated in my reading and so forth, and began to formulate the idea that what in fact I wanted to do was biological science rather than as experimental biological science. And by the time I went to Berkeley College, I was confirmed in this idea. It was difficult to see at that time how one could go beyond the bachelor's degree, which was free.
Mm-hmm.
By this time, also, my interests were increasingly in the notion of doing biological experimental science associated with disease. And it was very clear to me at that time that it would be impossible to even think about medical school. Impossible to think about medical school because at that time, because I was a Jew, and because it could not be afforded in my family. I mean, these two things were very clear. So that I looked for alternatives which would make it possible to do, which by that time I was convinced that I had to do.
What other alternatives could you not do because you were a Jew? That would have been close to you or very difficult.
Well, I think that was the clearest one. The question of graduate school was one route, and the question, and the other alternative, which I looked at, was then the idea of going to veterinary school as a system which would make it possible to get essentially the same kind of training, since I was not per se interested in any way in the practice of medicine directly.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that clearly at that time as well. Looked at the two sets of alternatives. Again, I had some very good teachers at Brooklyn College who were enormously helpful to me, both in formulating my own ideas and keeping me stimulated, and in helping me think about these kinds of possibilities as ways in which to develop.
Did you have a specific interest at that time? Or just?
Oh, yeah, there are a variety of kinds of things that I began to become interested in. As I took specific courses, so new things opened up, and more fun, and so forth. So I used to love to go to the shore and collect and observe, but I also began to look at ways of doing experimental things, which was quite clear to me. The sort of thing I was more interested in, experimental as compared to observational science. I still enjoy natural history in the sense of observation and so on, but the real fun, as far as I'm concerned, is experimental science.
After your bar mitzvah, did you have any formal contact with the Jewish community outside your family?
Well, of course, you know, in New York City, it's a completely different world from other parts. Yeah, well, it's a completely different world. You live, depending on the neighborhood in which you live in a neighborhood which is never out of contact with Jews as such. The neighborhood in which I grew up was, I suppose, one would say, a mixed neighborhood. The kids with whom I played much of the time in childhood and through grade school and so forth were very mixed. By mixed, I mean all white.
Mm-hmm.
They were, let's see, our block, I would say roughly a third of the kids with whom I played ball in the street were Jews, and roughly a third were Irish Catholic, and a third Italians.
What kind of buildings were these? Were these single-family
homes? Single-family homes.
Oh, they were single-family.
Yeah, this was in Flatbush. This was, as I say, the house in which I was born and which we then lost during the Depression.
Where did you go from there?
From there, we actually moved not terribly far away. We stayed in Flatbush, but instead of owning the house or having whoever it was that owned the mortgage owning the house, we then rented the house we were in from the Home Loan Corporation.
It was still single-family home?
Yes, we were still in a single-family home. It was a smaller home by that time. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother had graduated from college. He was working and running some money. And he, you know, in those days, the family stayed together until they married out. And we all contributed to the family.
Would you say they were the middle-class neighborhood?
It was, yeah, they were middle-class neighborhoods on hard times.
Oh, yeah. So it wasn't the typical Lower East Side?
Oh, no, no.
Very golden.
No, I mean, you see, my father succeeded in business and moved his family into middle-class neighborhood, had a house built.
That was going to step up.
Oh, yeah. From the neighborhood.
Did you belong to any organizations as you were growing up? Were you associated, say, with any Zionists?
No. Not at all. Members of the temple.
Mm-hmm. What did that mean?
Hmm?
What did that mean?
Oh, we went to religious school, we went to Hebrew school, we went to services.
Mm-hmm.
My father was one of the founding members of the temple, and this was a Reformed temple.
Mm-hmm. Was it a Reformed temple?
Yeah.
This was no longer part of the Lanzmann group that he came?
Well, some yes and some no. You know that all Jews have to have three congregations.
Right. Even for two Jewish families, aren't you?
One to go to, one to stay.
What to talk about?
Hmm?
What to talk about?
What to talk about? So no, but no, the family were not members apart from that of Jewish organizations like Workman Circle. We were familiar with their existence, but we. You know, generally speaking, we moved much more in the neighborhood, but there was never any question in our minds that we were Jews. We were glad to be Jews.
Do you think that was partially a function of being in a neighborhood that was two-thirds not Jewish? It was just a lack, complete lack of Jews?
No, I think so. I think that, you know, the extended family and the friendship circles and so forth and so on. By circles, I don't mean organized circles, simply the groups with whom we all associate. There was never any question in any of our minds that our friends were both Jewish and non-Jewish, but in many ways, in that there was an easiness in that place and that time. The only times that I can sensibly feel sensible feeling of real anti-Semitism was during the period of the Spanish Civil War, when there was clearly polarization on the part of some of our Catholic neighbors. And in the beginning, you know, Father Coughlin was working in those days as well. But in general, I would say ours was a neighborhood in which there was a real neighborliness.
How would your parents have reacted if one of their children had married a non-Jew?
One of my brothers did marry a non-Jew, and my sister-in-law was, when my parents were alive, was as dear to them as my other sisters were. There was never any problem. No, I feel very fortunate that in the whole situation.
Yeah, it really sounded beautiful.
Yeah, it was a good family life. Mm-hmm. When my brother told my parents that he was marrying Mary, it came as an initial shock to them. But as I say, she was as dear to them, and they were as dear to her. So it was a marvelous relationship between my sister and my mother. A very dear relationship. Yes, okay.
Oh, Smith, that's out of satiable curiosity.
No.
Were you involved in the war at all?
Let's back up a minute. So I graduated from Brooklyn College, and by that time I was looking at alternatives. Mm-hmm. And the two alternatives were graduate school and veterinary medicine was another alternative. And it was an alternative because as a resident of New York State, the veterinary school at Cornell is a state school, and therefore it would have been possible to go there at a very low cost.
Mm-hmm.
All I had to do then was to earn enough money to support myself with some. I got in. And in order to do that, I had to have some agricultural background, and so when I graduated from school, I went and worked on farms.
Just as
a farmhand. Milk cows, shovel manure, so forth. So I graduated mid-year, and so the previous summer I worked on a farm. One farm was a dairy farm in upstate New York. It was a dairy farm in Connecticut. It was back in the days when you worked cows by hand and so forth. It was all the kinds of things I grow.
You got the muscle up your head?
I grow horses. I still have the muscles in my arms. So.
What did your parents say about that?
That's what you want to do. No, we were told to make our own choices. We were told to do good at what it was we were going to explicitly and implicitly. We were told to do good, but make your own choices.
What happened if you didn't do good?
Problem doesn't arise, I guess.
All success.
Yeah, I guess I would say that the four of us, yeah.
So you did go to school at Cornell?
And I was admitted to veterinary school at Cornell, and I went there. And I entered in 1941, and I was one of four Jews in a class of 41. And for the first time, experienced real anti-Semitism.
Sounds like a quota thing. Sounds like a 10% quota.
Well, whether it was 10% quota or not, it was quite clear that I was experiencing overt anti-Semitism.
What kinds of things happened?
What kinds of things happened? Well, the standing on line at registration the very first day I was up there, I was somebody with a bachelor's degree, whereas at that time the preliminary requirements were 2 years. And so I was a few years older than most of my classmates. Standing on line at registration when some of the senior veterinary students came down the line asking which ones of you are freshman vet students. And so several others raised their hands, and they were out rushing for the two veterinary fraternities, and they simply didn't talk to me. They talked to the kid who was standing right next to me, and so I then recognized him over at anti-Semitism.
How did they know?
How did they know? Well, I had no idea. I guess they had the same secret telegraph as we had. Okay. And a variety of sorts of things happened through veterinary school.
Was there a problem with living arrangements or anything?
No, living arrangements were not a problem, really. And then you ask about the Army.
Did you?
Well, let's enter into the question, you see. We then got Pearl Harbor happened in the middle of my first year at veterinary school. And the Army decided that it needed veterinarians, and of course it had more people in the Army in 1941 and 42 than it knew what to do with anyway, as you recall. Well, you don't recall, you're too young, but historically, you know, they had more men than they knew what to do with in 41 and 42. So what they did was to take all of us into the Army as a part of the ASTP program and simply keep us in veterinary school. And that was an interesting experience because then, you see, what they did was put us in uniforms and house us. And so we all lived together at that point. And in fact, then, our classes in that three-year period were drawn much more closely together than had been the case previously in veterinary school. Some of the attitudes did not change on the part of faculty in the veterinary school. Mm-hmm. There was one Jew on the veterinary school faculty, Levine, T.P. Levine, who was a distinguished member of that faculty, and he told us that you fellows will face a certain amount of anti-Semitism from members of the faculty, particularly the clerical faculty, and this was quite clearly the case. But veterinary school was interesting.
What kinds of things happened from? What kind of pressures or indications of the faculty? What kind of things?
Oh, well, it was very clear, for example, that Jews did not get the same grades from members of the clinical faculty as non-Jews did, regardless of their work.
Was this ever explicitly?
Was it ever explicitly said? You mean the Jews don't get it, or just saw that it happened?
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, one just saw that it happened.
Okay. Oh, it never.
Yeah.
I mean, if you came in to complain about a grade.
Oh, well, nobody complained about grades in those days. No, one simply didn't. Anyway, so I finished veterinary school in, 1944. And by this time, again, I had some very good teachers who helped stimulate me in particular directions and so forth. And I decided that it would be a good idea then to, if the Army would let me, to now pursue a real scientific career rather than that the route here was to now, with a professional degree, go to a graduate degree. And fortunately, there were several possibilities, and the Army let me. Because in 44, they now suddenly decided that they had more veterinary officers than they needed. And there was an opening here to do research on a...
In Wisconsin.
On a disease of cattle, which was very important in terms of maintaining milk and meat supplies during the war. And so they weren't quite sure of what to do with me, and so they turned me loose. And I came here in 1944 to do graduate work.
What attracted you to Wisconsin?
What attracted me to Wisconsin was that I had, there were several potential openings. There was one at Penn State, and there was one here where they were, where the departments had sent inquiries looking for newly fledged veterinarians who were capable and interested in doing graduate work. And the reputation of several people on the faculty here through my reading in journals had clearly established itself. And so I said, well, let's go where the good people are. And so I came out.
What were you expecting?
What was I expecting? I was expecting to work in a laboratory and take coursework with, but to work in a laboratory with a mentor. And that's exactly what happened. I had a superb
mentor. To do it that way? To go to
To go to professional school and then go to graduate school is somewhat unusual. But I knew... as I was quite certain earlier that I, if had I gone to medical school, I wouldn't have been interested in practicing medicine. Having gone through veterinary school, I knew I was not interested in practicing veterinary medicine. And so what I wanted to do was to improve my scientific training and do science.
So it wasn't
that. Scientists say we do science. You know. That's what I wanted to do. But yeah, the training I had at veterinary school was very valuable, continues to be valuable. So I didn't find that at all a delay in my my chosen career as a
Did you come here as a bachelor?
I came here as a bachelor, but I had a girlfriend, and once I was here, I came, went back, and we're still married, and we lived happily ever after.
She from New York?
Yeah. She was a she was a schoolmate at Brooklyn College, so we were almost childhood sweethearts.
How did the faculty here treat you as a Jew?
And how did the faculty here treat me as a Jew? The person, my major professor, when I arrived, and he met us, first I came and then I went back, and by that time we were friends, and when I came back with my bride, he met us at the railroad station and so forth and so on. After about 3 months, he said to me, I want to show you something, Dave. And what he showed me was a letter of recommendation from one of the faculty members at Cornell, which said that I recommend Berman to you very highly. He is a Jewish boy from Brooklyn, but in spite of that, he, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what my major professor said to me was, Dave, this is what I want you to see, and I want you to know that A, I hate this kind of nonsense, and B, you should never feel in this laboratory that that any kind of discrimination will be placed, any kind of barriers will be placed before your advancement. So, now, at that time in the College of Agriculture, there were no Jews in the faculty. Now, I was not a faculty member, I was a graduate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 46, I got my master's degree, and I was made an instructor, and in 49, I got my PhD, and I began an assistant professor in 50. In 50, now you see the, when I became an instructor, GI students had already begun to come back, and, but this was to a considerable extent before the influx of new Jewish academics generally.
Not too much before this.
Well, yeah. 49, you yeah, see, right. Because the 46 people had to finish their PhDs mm-hmm. in 49 before yeah, they began right. to populate the. Mm-hmm. So, when I became an instructor, was a member of the faculty by this time, and you see, the Jews on the faculty then were Selig Perlman and Phil Cohen in the medical school, and two or three others, those I knew in particular. And then gradually, but yeah, I was the first, mm-hmm. there had been Jews in the College of Agriculture before me, but in the faculty, but not any substantial numbers.
Well, do you think it was a more common nation of Jews not applying? Or
well, I think it was in the faculty, and I think it was clearly a relatively small pool from which to draw, and in part, but yeah, certainly in certain departments there was discriminatory hiring.
School of Agriculture is supposed to be one of the most anti-Semitic departments.
Well,
is that true, or do you?
You see, I don't think we can characterize the college in that fashion. I think there are clearly departments in which it would not occur to them to hire a Jew if one were available, and I think there are clearly departments where the only basis upon which these decisions are made are on the basis of what the individual has to bring.
Where does the School of Agriculture fall?
Hmm?
Where does the School of Agriculture
fall? No, I say within the College of Agriculture.
Oh, within?
Yeah. If we look at this department, for example, over the years that I was a member of the department, it's a long time now, at one stage there were three Jewish faculty members. was left for other jobs. They were not, they didn't leave because they were not, in fact, other offers which they felt were better. This department made me its chairman for a 4-year period.
What year was this?
I was chairman from 64 to 68.
Did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy being chairman? It's a mixed blessing. I was promoted on or before schedule. The deans of the college appointed me to a variety of major committee appointments. I'm an associate dean of the graduate school and have been for 6 years. So I must honestly say that for myself, there is no question that I did not in my career experience any impediments toward advancement, either as a scholar or as in the academic hierarchy. Now, let me say that in veterinary science as a profession, I'm sure that in other institutions I would not have enjoyed the same degree of, and I'm sure of this, that there are places where A, I would not be hired, or B, if I were hired, I would not have been promoted.
Are there any overt incidences that you remember for anti-Semitism this time in Wisconsin?
Yeah, you mean within the university community? No.
Outside of the university community?
No, not directed specific. No more, I would say, than any of us living in what is a predominantly Christian community experience. It is different from living in New York, not because of the size of the community, but because of its composition.
Sure. Like what you're doing?
Do I like what I'm doing? Oh, come
good
on.
Choice.
Yeah, you can see I like what I love to teach. I love to do science. And I have found the administrative jobs that I've been given very interesting. I enjoyed doing that.
What are your plans for the future?
What are my plans for the future? Well, I expect to get out of administration at the end of this year entirely. And teach. I teach now. I mean, my deanship is a part-time deanship. One of the conditions was that I would not give up my major undergraduate course. I haven't given up my major undergraduate course. It's more fun.
More fun than teaching graduate school?
More fun than teaching graduate students? Yeah. Well, teaching graduate students is different. Mm-hmm. I teach an introductory course, and I figure if I excite one or two kids out of 40 a year, that's an enormous job.
Sure, that's not.
So, teaching graduate students is quite different.
What kind of commitments do you have within the Jewish community?
What kind of commitments do I have within the Jewish community? Let's see, we belong to Bethel Temple. Our kids went to religious school. I was a member of the board of Bethel Temple for 6 years. I was secretary for 3 years. My wife was on the religious school committee. I was chairman of the religious school committee for a while. I'm a member of the board of Jewish community, if you want to say. These are things which I would not have done, I guess. I'm presently a member of the board. These are things I'm quite sure I would not, really quite sure I would not have done had I been a essay on the faculty at NYU
Syracuse.
Well, I figure the community can get along well enough with the people it's got. And, so, I mean, being in a smaller community, there is no question that one feels more strongly an obligation. I think, I guess I shouldn't have said that because I'm not quite certain that that's true. There isn't any doubt in my mind that the knowledge of the Holocaust has changed some of my thinking from what it had been.
What kind of a change?
Well, clearly a sense of the preciousness of Jewishness. Jewishness was something that in my earlier life I took for granted and which is now a precious thing. You know, I'm not quite sure if I were living in a community in which there was a larger Jewish population in Boston, New York, Chicago, wherever, that I would simply not do any of the things I'm doing or have done. But
especially
I would guess that I would not have spent